You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 312. This week, we talk about the best we could do. Visit welcometocomics.com, hear past episodes, see what we're reading next, or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now,
the cast begins. Dinosaur cards, okay. Just sending me pictures of dinosaur cards from MTG.
That's a good friend.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I'm kind of disappointed because the first Ixalan set came out, where they came out with dinosaurs and they came out with a dinosaur legend that you could tell would be a commander card, I was like, cool, I'm gonna make that. So I bought two boxes of Ixalan. I was like, sick, I'm gonna make a dinosaur deck. And I made it, and it was really fun and snappy, and I enjoyed it. But now that I know that Brandon is making one, I'm like, well, mine won't be as good. I know I'll have fun playing mine, but I'm never going to play it around Brandon because Brandon's will just be better because he's willing to spend like $500 on a deck of cards and I'm not. Well, not that he's going to spend he has these cards just laying around from regularly buying shit tons of cards. So it's like I'm not going to go out and buy $200 worth of singles to make a deck that's going to compete with Brandon. So I'll just play mine.
He spends a lot of time like wheeling and dealing when it comes to Magic cards. I don't know a better way to put it.
No, and I believe it. Like, I know he, like, scores them for good prices, and he does a lot of good trades, too, because, like, he talks about how he has these cards laying around that now are worth a lot, so then he'll trade them for something that's worth a lot now, and, you know, like, yeah. I do know he's on that cycle, but, like, I don't have any energy for that. I'm gonna go to Channel Fireball, I'm gonna pick local pickup, and I'm just gonna drive over there and grab them. Past that, it's too much work. Inhumans got canceled officially.
I That's didn't even watch it.
Not surprising.
That's like the comic book news that I know right now. Is that Inhumans got canceled? Black Panther's coming out.
Oh, did you guys? You guys totally ignored me when I said that there is a. That there was a third installment in Frank Miller's Dark Knight series.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know what to make of it because you were like, it's better than Dark Knight Returns. And I'm like, that was pretty bad though, right?
That was my exact reaction. I was like, I need to look into this before replying.
I couldn't exactly tell how much sarcasm was in there because usually I can tell. But that one I was like, is he saying the wrong comic? Does he not remember?
No, that's my point. Is that it's not worse than the Dark Knight Returns or whatever that was. It Dark Knight Strikes Again.
Yeah, we were that. So
yeah, so I figure we should read this because it's the next part in the series. Don't you want to know what happens?
Okay, wait, which one is it? What's it called?
I have no idea. It's in the chat somewhere.
All right, I'll look it up. I'll add it to because we have one coming up for big events. I don't want to do DC's Metal Knights or whatever it is. Because apparently,
I want to do that one too.
It's awesome and crazy. And then I want to do Doomsday Clock because everybody's like talking about it, and I'm not sure they're still going to be talking about it in 6 months. So that'll be a good time to come back around to it. And then
I bought the first two issues of that. I need to read them still.
And then Secret Empire. I want to read that one too.
I know that it's called Dark Knight 3. Yeah, man, I don't know.
I'm just going to put that in. What happens if you go looking for Dark Knight 2? There's not going to be anything. Whatever.
I started typing Dark Knight 3 into my search bar, but for some reason I decided it should be in all caps. This is a very Frank Miller title. It's called The Dark Knight 3, The Master Race.
Oh, no.
Jesus Christ.
I'm worried. I'm genuinely worried.
So it wasn't. It was not written solely by Frank Miller. Brian Azzarello worked on it too.
Okay, that helps.
Co-writers.
That helps a lot.
And then it was also illustrated by, in addition to Frank Miller, Andy Kubert and Klaus Janson.
Okay.
So, it was well received.
Okay. So.
Andy, you'll like this. It has to do with the inhabitants of Kandor.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, I do like that.
Yeah.
Because Kandor is awesome. There's so many potential Supermans in there. Anyway, should we talk about this week's comic?
All right. This week's comic.
This week, we read The Best We Could Do by Ty Bui. This is the third in our Best of 2017 series. This is third or second? Third. Yes, it's third. It's hard to remember because we're doing like 10 this year. This is a memoir about Ty Bui's family and their journey to America from Vietnam. And I don't know where to place this in my mind because
did you call her? Did you? I don't think her name is Ty.
It's not Ty. How do you spell it?
Is it T?
T? It T? I think it might be T.
Okay, T Bui.
I am uncertain. God. So
the only one I remember is Bic because of that awesome correction in there.
Yeah.
That's the only one I know how to pronounce for sure.
Okay, T is pronounced like T, but the H sound is still there.
Like T.
Oh, goodness. So, if there's anything I've ever learned about Vietnamese names, it's that I butcher them, so...
Well, I mean, it's difficult. Advance. It's difficult for us as native Western language speakers because our language is not aspirated in the same way. We don't have to... rise and fall vowels the same way that you do in a lot of Eastern languages. Like ma has 8 different meanings or something depending on how you pronounce the M and the A and how you rise and fall with your voice as you say it in Vietnamese. So I'm not even going to go there on pronouncing these names. We're just going to get them all wrong all day.
We apologize, listeners.
Yeah, it's I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. Even though we live in San Jose, it's not going to happen.
Oh, hold on. Oh, goodness. I will link this to you guys, which is not helpful to the listeners at all, but the author actually has a pronunciation guide on the publisher's website.
Hey!
Oh.
And she actually, I guess, put her mom in front of the computer and had her read off all the words.
Nice.
That's awesome.
So that's extremely cool. So it's T in there, yeah? T?
Let's see. T.
Okay.
Right. There is nuance there that I am missing, but it is basically T.
Okay. So why T Bui? I'm probably doing Bui wrong, too. We're just going to do it. Don't worry. We're going to do it all wrong. We'll link a thing in the Facebook that Jen sent. But yeah, I don't know where to place this in my head. Because we just read My Favorite Thing is Monsters, and then Shade the Changing Girl, and then this is radically different from those two.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm like, I don't know where to place it in my head. I liked it, but a lot of the narrative felt disjointed in places in ways that I don't feel were intentional. And I might only have that impression because the volume that I have, there's a foreword where she talks about how she started this as like a project for a class, and then she came back to it as a story, and then she came back to it as a comic, and she had to learn how to do comics. And so, like, I in the foreword, I was told that the creation of this was disjointed. So maybe in reading it, I was seeing disjointedness where there wasn't one. But that was my main barrier with this. Like, sometimes it would go back in time, sometimes it would go forward. And I had, a hard time kind of figuring out where everything fit as I was going. But I really did like the story here.
Yeah, I had kind of the same experience reading it. Because there's a part where the narrator goes back to before her birth and kind of talks about her parents' upbringing and the birth of her older siblings, and they're not really in the same in chronological order.
Yeah.
And so it took me, I had to flip back a couple times, but after a little while I got it all squared in my mind.
Yeah. But I mean, that was like my big issue with this. But apart from that, I really, really appreciated the discussion that T is trying to have about living up to not just your parents, not just living up to your previous generation, but also living up to the expectations they have upon you. Like, the pressure of living up to so much. Like, obviously, T cannot have the same kind of life her parents did because she has not faced the same struggle she has. So there's a living up to the greatness of them for being able to adapt to that pressure and overcome as being the generation they are. And she just, there's no way she will ever measure up to that. But then also she feels that she will never measure up to the first daughter who died. And so it's just like, there's a lot of incredible storytelling here that just feels like it breaks my heart, but in a beautiful way, because I can relate to it, you know, especially I think as our generations, as millennials and the kind of before and behind that, there's a sort of generational sense that we're not as great of a generation. But maybe it's just because we haven't had the same struggles. And is that a bad thing? And like T is kind of grappling with that on a personal level with her own family, and learning about her father and his life and her mother and her life and the sadness and difficulty of it all. And it's an incredible thing to read, because at the end I'm like, yeah, I feel the same way, and it kind of sucks.
Yeah, the way I read this is it's kind of a love letter to her family, in the way that like familial love is messy and real and not always pleasant. It's complicated being that close to someone, and the way this explores, like, I guess, generational wounds almost is like, I think, a really nice way to try to understand the previous generation. Because she's not just like, she says she wants closeness, like to be emotionally close, but she also understands that there are things in the way of achieving that. And it seems kind of like maybe by analyzing them here and going through them and documenting it, she is able to put herself in her parents' shoes now that she is a parent. Yeah. That whole aspect of it. Like, I thought that final chapter where she's worried, you know, for her son, and she's coping with breastfeeding, and she's suddenly learning this new kind of empathy for what her parents went through and how different her life is and how different her child's life will be. I just thought that was like a really nice way to look at what it is to be a family.
Yeah. Yeah, but even in retrospect, like the stuff with her giving birth to her son and how difficult that is for her, and the difficulty of breastfeeding, like, it's, after reading this and looking back on that, I kind of don't know what take I want to have there. Because I can relate to that a lot. Not like the breastfeeding part, but like the difficulty of being a parent. Especially like the just, I don't know what the fuck is going on here. We took these classes, but the shit was fucked up. I don't know. I don't remember. You know, like, my baby does not want to stay in the swaddle, even though it's supposed to. Like I can relate to all that. But like, she's telling us that this is hard for her, and that it's difficult, and it's, and there's depression related here too, I think. And there's all of these things that are really hard. And even though I relate to it, then she goes on to tell the story of her parents and like her father holding one of the children in his arms on the floor in like a hut because that's how it had to be done, you know, and like how hard it was. Like, there's nothing in the retelling of her parents' story about how breastfeeding was hard or about how like these everyday difficulties were hard, because there were so many other greater difficulties. So it's kind of, I don't know, maybe it's something I'm bringing to this comic too, the not measuring up stuff. Which I totally could be bringing that here, and that's why I'm seeing it all over. I can totally, I'll cop to that. But like, it's an interesting that she frames it with her life and the difficulty she's having, but the meat of the story is that her life is just not difficult by comparison. or at the very least it's difficult in radically different ways.
Yeah. I think something that speaks to that too is, do you remember the scene where she's 14 or 15, they're already living, I think, in San Diego or in California, mm-hmm. and there's a fire in their apartment, mm-hmm. and she immediately grabs a washcloth to cover her mouth to protect herself from the smoke, grabs her documents, and evacuates. And she's like, this is what my parents have given me, the legacy of the refugee. You know, and I think it's this idea of, like, what situations do people have to be in order to pass that on to their children?
Yeah.
And then, and at the end, you know, she says, like, maybe my son will be free. So that to me implies that she is also telling us that, you know, she's not in that same situation as her parents, that even though she grew up in an environment of war where they had to evacuate, like, she actually had a pretty scary childhood, mm-hmm. by, you know, a lot of standards, even though her parents probably had it rougher, especially her father. That it's not just about what you experience, but also how you pass it on. And maybe just the fact that she was, like, having a kid made her start to question the stuff with her parents. So I don't even know if it's, like, so much a comparison, so much as, like, what do our parents give us, both good and bad?
Mm.
And, like, how will I do that for my child? Because I really do think it's, like, an exploration of that. Like, she talks about how much she fears her father.
Yeah.
But then she also... like, my favorite scene in this... He's looking at her drawings, and he's like, you understand why I didn't turn out normal.
Yeah.
But, like, that's such a connection to have a parent, like, say, you understand me and the things that have gone wrong in my life. Like, I think that's a really profound moment. And maybe the whole point of this is that understanding.
Yeah. And I, reading it, I felt like she got that understanding when I get the page where she's, it's like a profile of her father on a chair, and she's just talked about his life. And it's him in the apartment in San Diego, or something like that. And she's talking about the life that he's had and his fear and how he is living in the shadow of his own fear. And, like, the top half of the panel is him in the chair, and the bottom half is just the mirrored shadow that's even longer than him, of just the shadow that he's casting. And it's like a really good moment where you're like, yeah, like, as you're reading this, you're like, man, like, so many times I was like, that, fuck that guy, that's a shitty guy. You know, so many things that he had done that just made me feel like, come on, man, like, try, like, do something more. Like, I kept wanting to put more expectations on him, but by the time I got to that point in the story, it's not that I absolved him of all of that, but I was like, I can see why he disconnects, and I can see why, like, he's not wanting to build the connections he would have built otherwise. He's not wanting to get invested the way he would want to invest otherwise. Like, not that I even understand, because I don't feel like I can fundamentally understand that kind of a thing, but I can see it, and I can recognize it. And it was interesting for me to come around on the father that way, because I was, like, not expecting to come around on this guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the point, right? Like, that's her... I think that is the author's image of her father. That she realizes that he's done some questionable or bad things in his life, but it also, you know... He carries those scars or wounds with him, and because of that, she's able to at least understand. And he recognizes that in the scene, like you said, with where he looks at her drawings. It's kind of bittersweet in some way, right? Because she is connecting with her father, but it's over something that's kind of sad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I will say by the end, like you, Andy, like at the start, I had a lot of trouble feeling sympathy, you know, especially like he's the one steering the boat to get them to Malaysia. He takes them through the refugee camp, and I am looking at him and I'm like, this man has done so much to protect his family. And I feel like he really, as a character in this comic, and I know like he's a real person, so it's really weird to talk about him like this, but it's just like he gains so much respect, because at first it's like, oh, he's a mean, weird, smoking dad. And then, who couldn't even attend the birth of his children, right? And then he's like, you know, I was afraid my wife would die. And you're like, okay, there's more of the humanity there. And then you see his childhood. And it's like, oh, he's had to go through so much. But then you see him as a young adult, and he's like so intelligent. And then he does these things like to get his family, his children out of Vietnam. And you're like, that's a good dad. This is a man who put himself in danger and made real sacrifices to give his kids a better life. And then you're like, oh, damn. You know, like, so I think, you know, that's a really nice narrative unfolding of how that relationship developed.
You know, it's interesting, too, because I feel like we are... You know, in some of these autobiographical or biographical type stories, we get the story in a chronological linear progression, you know, right from birth to death or whatever. But in this way, I feel like we're discovering the path that we're taking is the path of discovery that the author took. So I imagine that before she decided to delve into her parents' past, she probably had some of the same pictures of her or images of her parents that we develop in the beginning of the story, and as she learns about them, her perspective changes. And so, because, you know, like you said, Jen, as the story goes along, we find out of all the things he did to protect his family. And it changes our perspective, and I think it changed the authors too. I mean, that's a lot of speculation, but that's kind of what I took away from reading it.
Yeah. And I think, I get that sense from the text itself, because in the beginning where Ty is talking about, trying to get these stories from her father, and you have to know how to ask the question. But once she figured out how to ask, the stories kept coming. And then she says, every story always feels like it has the same arc. Like, and the first story is about him and his brother making the two roads and then building that little community and then the fishing pond. And it was so great. And then somebody who dyed clothes came in and then the dyes killed all the fish and everything went to hell. And it's like, I can see how this whole journey with her father would be incredibly tiring and incredibly, not bothersome, but taxing, I think would be the word. Because that's like a simple, small story, but that's super... That's like a little gut punch to your emotions, you know? And if every story is like that, like, it's... I don't know how you sit through those conversations with your father to the point that you get this much out of him. Like, I can't imagine... I mean, my father had some rough points in his life, but it's nothing like this guy. And I don't want to talk to my father about the rough points in his life. So I can't imagine the emotional journey the author had to take to get this out of her father. But like that little setup of every story kind of feels like this. It all has the same arc. Like, man, like that little bit goes such a long way to letting you know what it feels like to have these conversations with their dad. And it sets you up for that feeling of discovery too, though. Like, they all have the same arc, and it's like this overlapping arc after arc after arc, and it's just like the sadness kind of falls into maybe another opportunity, which falls into sadness, which falls into another opportunity, and it's just like this continuing cycle of up and down that this guy had in his life. And so, I mean, that is how I guess you get to the point where you are now. He's just like, yeah, fuck this. Yeah, the other thing I want to talk about is the expectations that that the author has on her parents as a more Western, I want to say, but probably not even that would be the right word. Maybe cross-generational. I don't know the right. I don't know the right words here. But her expectations of her parents, because I got the sense in the first couple pages that she was real annoyed with her mom for just not being around during the birth. Like, I made so you had a chair here. You could come in. Like I wanted you to be here. I wanted you to be part of this baby's birth. I wanted you to be part of this family. I wanted to share this moment with you. And she just wasn't there. And there's like a deep feeling of disappointment. And then you find out why she's not there. And you're like, oh, yes, of course. Of course you're not going to be there. It reminds you of your dead children. Oh, God. Like, of course. But like that feeling of expectation, like how much it sets you up from the beginning of asking yourself, how much can you expect from the people who have lived these lives? Like, what can you reasonably expect from them to even start with? Just as human beings and what they've gone through.
Yeah, I also at the start kind of got the sense, like, from her mom throwing up during, you know, when T's in labor, that, you know, it really upsets her to see her child in pain. Because the thing that her mom says, like, at the end of that chapter is, like, you know, I forgot how much that hurt.
Yeah.
And yeah, like it's interesting because it's like you said, this whole narrative setup is giving the reader that her parents aren't there for her, that there's a lot of closeness missing, that proximity is not the same thing as closeness, as mm-hmm. she says. And, you know, by the end, you kind of get the sense like, I don't know if they're a broken family. They seem pretty like good. you know, that they're together. They actually do have that proximity. The way this narrative came together implies to me this huge sense of closeness. And maybe that reads differently for everybody, what it is to be close to your parents or to be close to your siblings. But I think one of the nice things about this comic is that it gave me a sense that by the end of it, she had achieved that. So, like, mm-hmm. we see her at the very end, like, asking her mom, like, how did you feel at the end of my oldest sister's life, like when the baby was dying? And, you know, the mom just says, like, it was a gift. And then she just hugs her mom, and you're like, that emotional support that she needed when she was, you know, when T's first becoming a mother, it's there. We see it. Like, the mom might not have been there during labor, but she was there to provide something very necessary at that phase as well. So
yeah.
I don't know. I found this whole narrative arc to be really satisfying as a reader.
Yeah. And I was surprised in what ways I related to it, too. Just, in, like, my life is obviously very different from T's. but there's so much in here that's relatable on so many different levels, I think, from a lot of different angles, too. Like, the mother being unapproachable, but you can tell she cares. I feel that with my mother-in-law, because I'm super Western and my mother-in-law is super Indian. And there's, you know, you don't really hear them say, I love you to each other, but she'll cook every meal for you. She will help you do the laundry. She'll help you make the bed. Like, there's the different ways that the different generations say, I love you, based on the cultural context of what they found acceptable growing up themselves versus what's there today. And, like, that's the way I was able to come to it with the mother. Like, and I totally see her T's mother talking to T's husband more than she talks to T. I see that. I totally see that. Because there's just, like, I want to, the sense of, I want to protect my child from this. And I, you know, my daughter doesn't want to know, or the sense that you've been protecting your child from these things for so many years. Oh, but this is just some random white guy. I can tell him a story. You know? Like it's interesting how within the same car you can have such different contexts for conversation just between those three people. I don't come to this with any sense of T's life, but there's so many things in here. And that's, I think that's what I really found special about this, is there's parts that just broke my heart and parts that I was like, I don't know, man, this is fucked up. But then there's parts where it was like, yeah, I'm there for this. I see you. Yeah, let's go. And it's an interesting mix, but it does make for a really satisfying read, I want to say.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. What did you guys think of the art? Because I think T was an artist before a comic book artist.
I liked it a lot. Yeah, it's great. I think that the art goes well with the story, because this is about this is very much about the story and not about the it's not about the imagery in the same way that like a Cape comic is, where you're trying to show action or a lot of motion and stuff. This mm-hmm. is just real situations. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think so. It looks like a like ink brush and maybe some watercolor, and this is all stuff that like happened at least a decade ago, right? Because it came out this year and her son is 10 now. So I would say like that the ink brush choice is really good, because it has a certain fluidity that lends itself really well to the depiction of memory.
Yeah.
Right? Like memory, when you're trying to show that in like the comics medium, works really well when you kind of blur the lines a little and make it looser and not as like tight in its depictions of like line and like, but then we still have like really nice frame layouts that are really like, there's nothing like flowy really about the frames. They're like pretty solid rectangles, so that like keeps the narrative going, right? While the art itself is like a little more fluid in its depiction.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing I had about, because again, in the foreword, she talks about how she came to comics as a new medium, and she had to learn it, and she learned it for this. You can see parts of that there, and there's nothing wrong with being an author turned artist. One of the favorite things I have ever read, Boxers and Saints, is done. It's an artist author who was an author first who learned how to draw for that book, and I fucking love that thing. Fucking love Boxers and Saints. But this, I think what was really smart with this was the color swathing in the background. I don't know if it's watercolor. It kind of feels like watercolor.
That's what I think. I mean,
yeah.
Not that I'm an artist of any kind.
I think that worked out beautifully, because there's times where the narration is more nostalgic and it's more the good times, and the tone of that orangey yellow gets more sepia. And gets more of the nostalgia coming out of you. But when things are getting more dramatic and more tense, it gets deeper and angrier of a color. And just that color swath that's kind of there on every page and kind of runs through this book, it does a really good job of slightly bending the tone of each page. Which I think is a fantastic way to get around the fact that maybe you don't work with color so confidently in a comic book medium, because that's a whole another ball of wax. Like, you can do pencils, but then to color it, like how you color it, how you shade those colors, how you ink the colors, like that's a whole other ball of wax. It's really difficult, and that changes drastically the tone of your work if you don't get it just the way you want. So I mean, that's a whole other skill set, and that's why so many comics have a separate inker and a separate colorist, because that's an entire fucking career. So I'm not going to be like, T, you should have learned how to color if you wanted to get into comics, because that's a fucking ridiculous thing to say. I think this was a genius way to put color on the page and to to use the color to relate the tone in a way that traditionally colored comic would, but maybe do it in a way that's more subtle and I think has more impact because of that subtlety. I think that was just a genius stroke on her part to do this watercolor stuff.
Yeah, and it's just, it's really beautiful to look at. Like, any of these given pages, I think there's just so much artistry in there. Like, it was a pleasure to read this. It was a pleasure to look at each of the drawings.
Oh my god, there's where she talks about how, as a kid, she went to her friend's house one summer out in the boonies, and they would, like, stay out all day and, like, play in the reeds, and you know, they didn't have a bedtime, so they would, like, hang out under the moon, and there's, like, I cannot remember the exact context of that part of it, because there's so much in this. Not that it wasn't important, there's just so much in this, and I can't remember exactly where it was.
It was her mom's narrative growing up.
Yeah. Yeah. And those pages are fucking beautiful. Like, that scene under the moon is just, it's gorgeous. And, like, I was reading the pages, like, shit, I have a kid, man. I should move out to the boondocks and let my daughter play outside all day. Like, part of me was like, that sounds so wonderful. And I know it's romanticized, but I relate to that. That's another thing I relate to, because, like, we would go to my aunt's house, who has a ranch out in Oakdale. And we'd go there for Easter and shit. And I just remember, like, we would get there and my parents would go inside and I would, like, run around. We'd go down to the basement and catch crawdads and frogs and shit. You know? And, like, that feeling of just freedom and exploring the environment around you in a way that you don't get to all the time. Like, I feel like that's such a deep-seated feeling of being a kid. Or at least it should be for most children.
Yeah. And you know what it is? I think the brilliance is, like, okay, so when you're looking at, like, what can I depict? Like, you have so many choices, right? You could show yourself playing with your friends in whichever ways, or, like, the house itself, or, like, so much stuff. But the things that she chose to depict here, I'm looking at this page, and it's, like, kids running around with sticks yelling charge. kids who have just caught, like, a basket of crabs. A bunch of ducks, or maybe geese, eating a meal, and then, like you said, the, like, hanging out under the night sky. To me, that is so iconically childhood. I feel like that is just, like, a universal childhood thing. You know, every kid loves geese, and, you know, like, every kid runs around with sticks. This is just so, like, what it is, and that brought a nostalgia, and I think that so much of what makes this comic relatable is that, like, this is someone's super personal comic about their family. And it can get really weird reading about and then talking about strangers' lives like you know them. Because mm-hmm. It's like, you know, these are real people. They're not characters. But then, like, the ability to choose certain things that depict certain moods, like that for childhood, or like just all the scenes of Vietnam, the things that were chosen to, you know, the way the buildings are depicted, even like the architecture's really different, the materials are different, the types of trees are different, like all of these choices make the comic feel real to us. So I think that's a good way to, like, invite someone into such a personal story and make it less, I won't say, like, less intimidating, because that's not the word I'm looking for. Like, I don't know, just make it friendly to say, like, come on in, and this is who my family is. And then for me to sit here and be like, oh, I totally get what you're saying. It's those specific depictions. Also, the ducks, that is childhood right there.
The other one of the last things I specifically want to bring up is I think how well, in a subtle way, this comic, maybe not even subtle way, but this is ostensibly a narrative about T's family and her parents growing up and their move or escape from Vietnam to America. But in there, and I think naturally has to be in there, is the confusion of Vietnam and its people and Vietnamese identity for that generation. And even moving forward to today, the idea of like the French schools being the best schools, but that's only because they were colonial, like they were colonized. But then like what it means and how good you felt, how good they felt to get that opportunity to go to those French schools. But at the same time, everybody else was so poor and there was so much difficulty there. And then when the communists came in, it's like you, there's so much confusion that her parents had in multiple instances of like, I understand where they're coming from and I want to philosophically get behind them maybe, but the practices are not right. And like, there's so much confusion and gray in the politics. And I don't want to necessarily talk about politics at all, but I think this story handled that entire situation really, really well and gave me context for the conflict and that part of Vietnamese history that, like, I've watched half a dozen documentaries about stuff like this, and this did such a better job of helping me feel that way, like, with her mother's parents having been landowners, so being afraid, but, like, also being sympathetic, but still wanting that power because it meant, you know, these things for their family. Like, all of the context around the entire situation with her family, like, really helped me understand a little bit more what was going on there. Because, like, you know, you watch documentaries, but they're so polarized, and you read history books, but that's written by Americans from an American point of view, and it's all, like, from above looking down, and this did a really good job of getting you a sense of what that felt like as a person who may have been there. Like, that point of view is something I've never gotten before, and I really appreciated it here, even though it was not like intentional, a forward part of this comic, but it was really, it was handled really well, I thought.
Yeah. And I think too, like, at least for me, a lot of the education that I got about the Vietnam War and the events preceding it were very American centric, you know, like Johnson and Nixon and all that. And T kind of mentions that too, like how she had grown up learning about these things, but like what was it to be in the war? And this was really educational in terms of just giving it a larger context, mm-hmm. that didn't have to do with America's entry or like America's squabble with China. Giving it a context that's personal too. Like, I don't know. I feel like this is actually one of the best explanations of the events around the war that we got. And it's not even directly about that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, did you guys have anything else before we want to rate this?
No.
No.
Before we get into rating, the first thing I want to do is thank Tibui for creating this thing and growing it from, as she says in her forward, growing it from a project into this comic that we could have in our hands and read. And I want to thank Clarissa Wong for doing the editing and everyone else up and down who's associated in creating this comic book, because I mean, we obviously liked it, but even if we hadn't, no matter how much we do or don't like comics, the creators create the thing and we're just sitting here talking about it. So thank you for creating this and putting it in our hands. And also we're going to get into our rating. 2.5 is average, more, less, all up to us. It's completely subjective. I get asked every once in a while, like, what is the rating system? I never get asked, never run. I don't. But yeah, it's entirely subjective. So whatever we want to do, we do. That in mind, how about you go first, Jen?
Okay. I'm going to give this a 5. I think that this comic has that special thing that will make me remember it for a long time, that made it really enjoyable and engaging to read. It had a lot of heart. I think that this is a narrative that could have, as I said earlier, like it's extremely personal, but it invites you in to learn something about another country. It's an ode to a lost homeland. It's an ode to family, to things that are so incredibly personal that could be really hard to make someone understand if they know nothing about it. And I think that the stories about her family, about Vietnam, about what it is to come to America, are just so readily inviting in this narrative to the reader to understand better, to understand who these people are and what their complexities, like, as real humans, that, you know, this really just shone as a really lovely meditation on family. Also, the art's just really gorgeous. It was a pleasure to read, and I totally think this comic deserves to be on all those, like, best of 2017 lists. It was just really good. So, 5.
All right. David?
Yeah, this is definitely a 5 for me as well. It's just a beautiful story. I loved reading it. I don't know what else to say beyond that. It's so good. It's a beautiful story about family and, you know, different generations, you know, and their journey from a troubled homeland to, you know, where they are now. And it's just great. The art's beautiful. Like Jen said, this is one of those ones. I know sometimes when we find a comic that we really love, it's hard to talk about it because I just want to say, yes, it's great. Read it. but like Jen, I think this is one that's going to stick with me in the same way that Boxers and Saints does. That's one of those, this comic will be like that, in that whenever it comes up, I will tell people, yeah, you absolutely have to read this comic because this is totally something special. So, 5 for me.
Yeah. I mean, I started off this, episode talking about what I didn't like about this, the kind of disjointed narrative, because that was literally the only thing I could think of that I didn't like about it. So, I'm also going to give it a 5. I think in a way it kind of works, in that these are memories, and memories get jostled around and told in different order, and you have to wade through them in a way that you don't have to other things. So it's, on the one hand, I kind of wanted a more structured narrative, but this is a person and her family, and that narrative just naturally is not structured in the way the story is. And to force it into that kind of changes the nature of how she heard it. So it's like, it's kind of like being a translator, right? Like you want to do the translation and you have to decide, do I translate in a way that's word for word authentic to the original text? Or do I translate in a way that gets the meaning across the best? Or do I translate in the way that gets the rhyme and rhythm across correctly? There's so many different ways to interpret how you want to tell the story again. And I think T chose to tell it in a way that gave the story more structure, but also helped you get a sense for how she heard it and a sense for how she got into those waters too. So even though it's the thing that I found difficult in approaching this book, I think in the end that still works too. I think almost everything works in this comic. So yeah, 5. And yeah, I'm glad this was in our best of 2017 list, because like Jen said, it totally deserves to be here. But that's it. Next week, we're going to come back to a Cape comic, kind of. I don't know. Doom Patrol's weird. We're going to read Doom Patrol Brick by Brick by Gerard Way. This is the second Young Animal. Young Animal being like DC's little branding thing for their weird comics. This is the second
I believe it's one. Called an imprint.
Imprint, yes. this is the second one that we're going to have in our best of 2017. Shade the Changing Girl was weird and neat, and Doom Patrol. I bought the first one, and I was like, I don't have time to sort through this. This is too weird. So I have the single issue for issue 1 in a long box somewhere. And I'm not going to dig it out. I'm just going to go get this thing on Comixology. But I was like, I bought that first one. And I was like, I can't do this. This is too much. But I guess I'm going to do it after all. So here we go. Next week, then, Doom Patrol, Brick by Brick by Gerard Way. If you want to see what we have coming up after that, go to welcometocomics.com. On the left, click on the link that says Future Shows. You can see what we have coming up for like the next 4 or 5 months. I'm not even kidding. If you have a suggestion for what you want us to do coming up, you can click on the button that says Contact Us. There's a little form. You fill it out. It goes straight to my inbox, and we will probably not just take that under advisement. Odds are if you give us a reading recommendation, we'll sneak it in ASAP. Because we don't get recommendations often. And when we do, we're like, I'm pumped when I get one. I really want to read that thing. And if you like the show, go to patreon.com/welcometocomics and support us. You can do it for a penny, or you can do it for more. Show us you love us. There's perks on there, I think. I don't know. Check them. You can go to the website and see. Go. Just go and look. It doesn't cost you anything to visit the site. Just go. Yeah. Next week, Doom Patrol, brick by brick by Jura. Until then, everybody, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.